Well, welcome to the second episode of My Life in Football in association with Square Media and Repost Retail Solutions. And in this episode, we speak to the Southern League Life President, Mr. Keith Allen, from his early days in football through to being Secretary of Wycombe Wanderers and that famous FA Cup game, all the way through in his career, all the way through to being joining the Southern League and being the Life President of the Southern League. Hope you enjoy. Well, welcome to My Life in Football. And of course, this is our second edition of the show. And I can honestly say I'm really happy to introduce to you. Some people probably will recognise Keith, as we were just saying off air. Some people may not. And of course, joining us today is Keith Allen, the president of the Southern League. So, Keith, a massive welcome to the show. And it's great for you to be able to give up some of your time to come and chat to us.
Thank you, David. I'm very pleased. I am sort of semi-retired, and when you're retired, every day's a Sunday. So I have got time to talk to you.
That's fantastic. I mean, Keith, you know, the name of the show is, you know, My Life in Football. And, you know, I found out sort of bits and bobs, and as I was doing my sort of like research and asking questions, and people were telling me, and we'll come on to it later, you know, the fascinating story of Wycombe's you know, sort of run to the semi-finals of the FA Cup. Of course, you were secretary of the club at the time, and we'll come into some of the stories around how that happened and Essendon, which is what
we also got to the semi-final of the League Cup. If you look at the picture behind me,
but I mean, so Keith, I mean, how did you start off in this crazy game of football?
Well, I was like everybody else. I kicked a ball around, and when I was at work, I worked with a director at Bedworth United, and in 1973 he said to me, "Why don't you come and join us? We're looking for a secretary." And I went to Bedworth United. We didn't win a game all season. We lost every week. But they were nice people. We finished bottom of the league. They were nice people. But then I was offered the secretary's job at Atherston Town, who had just got promoted to the Premier Division. So I left Bedworth on good terms. They wished me all the best of luck. And I moved to Atherston Town as secretary there. I had several wonderful years there. We finished runners-up to Wimbledon one year came third the year Wimbledon went up. So we did very, very well. Then I had a spell at Nuneaton Borough. Then I had 10 years at Atherston United. And then in 1999, I received a tip that Wycombe Wanderers were looking for a secretary. I'd done 28 years apprenticeship in non-league football. And I thought about it, and the children were grown up and gone. So I could afford not to earn quite as much money as I was earning, because I was a director in the construction industry. And I decided to give them a ring and pop and see them. Went to see the chairman, Ivor Beeks. They'd just parted company with their secretary, by mutual consent, I'll say. they were looking for somebody who could start straight away. So I went back, sold the shares in the business. All my partners thought I was mad. My wife supported me in what was a crazy, crazy gesture. I moved from Nuneaton, where I'd lived for 50 years, to Aylesbury, and I became the secretary of Wycombe Wanderers Football Club.
Whereabouts were they, Keith, at the time? Because they had, you know, a very good big rise through the echelons of football, Wycombe. I mean, where were they, you know, sort of league-wise when you took over as secretary?
They were in League One. They were in League One. The first 10 years I was at Wycombe, they were in League One. Mm. And they were a great club. And I couldn't have picked a better club, because they were recently non-league, but they were in the Football League. So I got the benefit of it being a good family club who know what it's like at the other end. And also being a Football League club as well.
So, I mean, going there, I mean, that must have been, you know, as you say, family-wise, and also a big jump from going from non-league from, you know, Atherston United, moving into to Wycombe. And, I mean, at the time, though, I mean, you said to me that you was quite confident with your decision to go to Wycombe. I mean, was it, you know, how tough was that decision in the end, you know, with family-wise,
Was it something that you had to sort of think about for a long time or for a period of time, or was it something you thought, no, this is definitely right for me?
Well, I'd always wanted to be a secretary of a football league club. I'd done 28 years apprenticeship, if you like. In fact, when I went to Wickham, the chairman, the first game, I was interviewed by the local press after the game, and he said, how long did it take you to get to Wickham? Which he meant, how long from Nuneaton to Wickham? I said, 28 years, which sums it up. So it wasn't a difficult decision for me. My wife, who I love dearly and I've been married to for 50 years, it was a great decision for her to make. It was a big wrench. Our family and our friends were in Nuneaton. We'd both lived in Nuneaton all our lives. And all of a sudden, we were moving a long way away to drop ourselves in Aylesbury. And we had to start again. And that was where the decision came. But she backed me, as she always has done. And it was, apart from getting married in the first place, it's the best decision I ever made.
So what is, I mean, some people probably, you know, maybe might have the same ambitions as yourself to, you know, that might listen to the show and may have that same ambitions to actually be a secretary in a league club or something else in a league club. How, you know, what was the difference in the job, you know, from being in a non-league side as a secretary to actually being a league club, you know, what was the differences in that sort of, I suppose, job or job description from one to the other? Was there much difference?
An absolute million miles. The Football League was far more professional. There were more noughts on the end of the losses, but it was far more professional. Everything was done correctly. The football was better. The stadiums were better. I was fortunate that I'd gone extremely well with the chairman and the directors and the seven managers that I had, of which I loved working with all seven of them, some more than others. But I might tell you which my favourite one was later. And then it was not difficult once I got there because it was so much different. When I arrived, I signed my contract and I just signed it. I read it, but I signed it. And after about 6 months, I went in November, so it would have been in the middle of the summer, the financial controller came in and said, here's your bonus. So I looked at this slip and I got quite a huge bonus. So I said to him, why have I got a bonus? We lost £480,000 last season. Why did I get a bonus? And he laughed. He said, because we budgeted to lose £100,000 and £480,000 was a bonus. And that was where my bonus came from. But it's a different world. And within 18 months, of course, I'd gone from Atherstone United, where we were getting crowds of 150, 160, to an FA Cup semi-final at Villa Park in front of 42,000 people. That was within 18 months of leaving Atherstone.
And I mean, what was your first memory of your first game? Can you remember who your first game was against when you took over the role there at Wickham? Can you remember if it was...
At Wickham?
Yeah.
At Wickham. Well, when I first got there, the first game was against Oxford City in the FA Cup, first round of the FA Cup, and we drew. And Oxford City didn't want us to go for the replay to their ground, so we switched it to our ground. And the chairman was I won't describe him, but he wasn't an easy man to deal with. And I was dealing with all the arrangements. So we came, and it was none in the first game, and it was none in the second game. And they were miles below us in the league. So we played extra time, and it was still none in extra time. And it went to penalties. And the ball was placed on the penalty spot. And all of a sudden, the stadium safety officer announced that he was abandoning the game because of a fire behind the goal. The referee came rushing across to me and said, Keith, what's going on? I said, I don't know. So we went to see the stadium manager and he said, there's a fire behind the goal. I've got to evacuate the stadium. So we evacuated 2,000 people from the stadium and everybody went home and the penalties weren't taken. The Oxford City chairman was less than impressed with this. I had a long argument with him that lasted 2 weeks where he tried to claim the game. The FA insisted that the game was replayed, the whole game. And it was replayed at Oxford United and we won 1-0 with Steve Brown scoring a goal in the second half. And so that was boring you with my first game. And that was my introduction to Wycombe Wanderers.
Absolutely incredible. In fact, you know, when you say stories, it's sort of stories sort of ring, you know, ring bells. And it's something that you sort of remember from that, from back in that time. But I mean, that first season you were there, who was the manager of Wycombe?
The manager was Laurie Sanchez. Laurie was a lovely man. I ended up getting on very well. But he was a very private man. And I started in November. And he came to see me every day and we nodded, but we hadn't got a really close relationship. We didn't talk much. And then on Christmas Eve, he came into my office and he got his arms behind his back and he took one arm out and he put a bottle of Glenfiddich malt whiskey on the table. He said, "You're in my team. You better have this. Happy Christmas," shook hands and walked off. From that moment onwards, we were big pals. He came in every day, we discussed everything, and he was brilliant. And of course, it was Laurie that took us to the, or he was the manager, that took us to the FA Cup semi-final.
So, I mean, at that same time, you know, according to sort of the research I've got in front of me here, you were also, you know, for the first year or so, chairman and vice president of the Southern Football League as well at the same time.
Yeah, what happened was in 1991, I went onto the board of the Southern League. So this year I've been on it 32 years or 31 years. Mm. And while I was on that board, I became the vice chairman and did all the ground grading. And then in 1999, I resigned as vice chairman because I didn't have a club. So the club, we had a president who was Peter Faulkner, lovely man. And the league, particularly the board, didn't want me to go. So they found me a job to stay and they made me vice president. So you don't need a club for vice president. So I was vice president of the Southern League. I went to all board meetings. I was very heavily involved with the running of the league, but I was a full-time professional at Wycombe Wanderers Football Club.
So, I mean, one of the questions that, you know, I mean, one of the jobs I've always wanted in person myself was to be on the board of, you know, of a league, et cetera, to try and help out in that sort of way as well. But of course, I'm not a director of any club or anything like that, and probably never likely to be. Would you like to see that sort of rule change a little bit so that, you know, because there might be really good qualified people that could go on to the Southern League board, the Northern League board, the Isthmian board, you know, but they're not actually directors of clubs. Would you like to see that change or would you just like to see it stay as it is?
Personally, I think it's got to stay as it is. I am a member of the Southern League board as president. I go to all the board meetings. I have a full say. I don't shut up. I'm not a cardboard cutout. I have a full say. I take a full part, but I don't have a vote. Mm. I am independent. Everybody else on the board has got a club. And it's quite right that because their clubs are involved, that they should have the major say in how the league is run. Mm. You can't have a string of non-executive directors without clubs who are deciding how the club's money is spent. So everything that happens within the Southern League is decided and done by 10 directors, each one of which has got a club in the league. In fact, it's 11 because you've got the chairman as well. Each one of the clubs, you've got a club in the league, and they make the decisions as to what happens, who gets fined, what wood goes here, who goes, and that's how it should be. I tell a lie. Anthony Hughes, who is the vice chairman, has no club either now. He's been very ill, and he's not at Merthyr anymore. He's a lot better than he was. So there are two of us independent on the board, and then 10 directors. So I think it's right that the league is run by the clubs, for the clubs, although the clubs don't always appreciate that. And sometimes I think they think we're the enemy, but we're not.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And on Anthony's front, I've not met the man face to face yet, but loads of calls over sort of Zoom, et cetera, et cetera. And probably one of the nicest men I've ever met in non-league football, bar none. Lovely, lovely man.
But, well, I mean, you haven't met me before today.
Exactly, yeah. And now we now there's two of you. But I mean, going back to your Wickham days. So I mean, you know, you ended that season. I mean, after the Oxford game, I mean, where did we go from there?
Well, we had a little bit of a cup run that year, and we ended up getting knocked out at Wigan. As all managers, secretaries, and supporters say, we were robbed by the ref. But we got knocked out at Wigan. That was the end of the first season. It was in the second season we had our FA Cup run. And it's indelible on my memory.
So, I mean, that run, if we can talk about that run, you know, first, and, you know, I mean, of course, everybody remembers the famous scene of I think, if I remember rightly, Laurie had got sent off and he was out the back watching a TV screen out the back, and a certain Essendo comes onto the pitch and scores the winner against Leicester, if I'm right in saying.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, how did the... if I'm right in thinking, there was a story around Essendo and how he came to Wickham in the first place.
Let me run you through that. Yeah, well, I'll come on to that in a minute if I can. Mm. That picture of Laurie in the under the stand, I was on that as well. And if you look, there's a bloke jumping up and down in the background and hugging Laurie, and that was me. I'll go back to the Roy Essendo thing. We'd had a bit of an injury crisis, and we'd got an FA Cup quarterfinal coming up. So quarterfinal coming up away at Leicester, and we got no strikers. They were all injured. And after training one day, Laurie came into my office, and the pressman was there as well, Alan Hutchinson, and so was Terry Gibson, the assistant manager. And Laurie was moaning because we got no players, no forwards. How can we play Leicester without forwards? And then he said, what we ought to do is to advertise on Teletext, see if there's anybody fancies a game. And we all laughed. The next thing we know, Alan Hutchinson, who was the pressman, had gone away and advertised on Teletext for any strikers who fancied a game. Roy Essendo's agent got in touch, and Roy Essendo turned up for training. We signed him on. He played two reserve games. I'm sure Roy wouldn't mind me saying this. He was useless. It was far too... He hadn't been playing much. It was above where he'd been playing because he'd come from some sort of non-league setup. And he was then sub in a league game, and then it came to the FA Cup quarterfinal, and he was on the bench, and we brought him on, or Laurie brought him on, and just before the goal, the ball went out to the right hand side of the pitch, and Roy just stood in the middle. And Laurie turned to me and he said, what the effing hell is he doing? Why don't he go out and close the bloke down? The cameraman in the door caught the picture of the two of us and put it on the screen. Laurie turned around to the cameraman and said, F off, we don't want to see you, we want to watch the match. it went back to the match just at the point where we had a free kick over the other side of the pitch. The kick was knocked in, headed back by Jamie Bates, and all of a sudden, Roy Essendon scored the only goal he ever scored in a Wycombe Wanderers shirt, and it was a magnificent header. What a great header it was. Laurie and I, because I'd been sent to keep Laurie in the room because he was excitable and he'd have gone out. Laurie and I just hugged each other and jumped up and down, which isn't me. I just sit there impassive as a rule. But we'd just got into the FA Cup semi-final.
And it's one of those things, as you say, with Roy, it's the funny thing, I suppose, around it was the fact that he's, as you said, he wasn't necessarily the greatest player, but has probably become one of the most sort of famous players in Wickham's history because of one goal, you know, a few games played and scores that goal and almost becomes sort of like a cult figure, you know, in FA Cup history as well as in Wickham's history, I would have thought. And I mean, it was... I still remember the day. I still remember watching the game live on the TV when it was on the TV and watching what was going on. It was one of the most amazing FA Cup moments, I think, of I wouldn't necessarily say my childhood, but of my sort of adult life of remembering those sort of goals. And it was just a fantastic game.
Well, for that, for the next 10 years, the ITV used that as a prelude to all of their FA Cup productions, including me and Laurie jumping up and down in the background. I had friends from all over the country ring me up and say, "I've just seen you on the telly." I had somebody who was in Spain rang me up and said, "I've just seen you on the telly."
Did you get your royalties from that?
No. Roy was a lovely, lovely man, and I felt really sorry for him because, if you can imagine the dressing room at the end of the game, Leicester were in the top three of the Premier League at that time. The week before, they'd beaten or drawn or done something with Liverpool. We had no chance. So the dressing room was absolutely jumping. Even I was in there. Everybody's jumping up and down, as dressing rooms are when you've got a significant victory. And I left them in there. And when I got outside, his agent was there, a man from somewhere near Cambridge. Steele, his second name was. I didn't know his first name. He said, I want to see Roy. So I fetched Roy out to him, and he chatted to Roy. And he did no more but put Roy straight into a car and drive him off. He didn't get involved in the celebrations at the bar, at the pub afterwards, or the hotel afterwards. He spirited Roy away because I think he could see pound notes. Mm. And Roy wasn't allowed to get involved. But he was a lovely man, Roy. But I think the level he played most of his career at was his level. He'll never score a better goal. It was a great goal.
Take to pass on to your children and your grandchildren, don't it?
I've written a book. 90,000 words. And that's only one chapter.
So what was that like then, going from there, you know, massive, massive high? What was that like as a secretary and as a club then, maybe going into, you know, and again, I wouldn't know who the next league game was against, but then going into a league game after that? Did that sort of cup run affect your league position that year?
We went from top five to bottom five. We lost 5-0 at Walsall the week before we played Liverpool in the FA Cup semi-final. But my most memorable moment, I suppose, apart from the goal, was the day after. And I'm sitting at home and Wickham had played their quarter-final on the Saturday. There was Chelsea, West Ham, Liverpool and Spurs. And there was a game on the Sunday. I think it was West Ham and Spurs, but I can't remember. And I'm watching it on the television at home in Aylesbury. And at half time, they drew the FA Cup draw for the semi-final. and it came up Liverpool versus Wycombe Wanderers. If you look behind me, you'll see them. Yep. Liverpool versus Wycombe Wanderers. And I was really chuffed. And the phone rang. And it was a man, it was the Steve Clark, who was the competition secretary at the FA. And he said the most, it was the most memorable phone call I've ever had in my life. He said, "Keith, well done yesterday." And his exact words were, "Where do you want to play your FA Cup semi-final against Liverpool?" Can you imagine somebody actually saying that to you 18 months after being at Atherston United? I said, "What choices have I got?" He said, "Well, there's nowhere in London big enough, because the Emirates wasn't there. Yeah, Chelsea hadn't been improved. Tottenham hadn't been improved." So he said, "Well, you've got two choices." He said, "Old Trafford at Manchester or Villa Park." I personally thought about it for 2 seconds and made my mind up where I wanted to play it. So I said, "I'll ring you back, Steve." So I rang the manager and I said, "They've offered us Old Trafford or Villa Park." I said, "Villa Park is reasonably close to Aylesbury, not too far. It's halfway between the two clubs." I said, "We'll fill Villa Park." I said, "If we go to Old Trafford, we won't fill Old Trafford. It'll be three quarters full. Our supporters will have a tremendously difficult journey on a Sunday for a 4 o'clock kickoff." I said, "Where do you think we should play it?" He said, "Oh, no, well, definitely Villa Park." So I said, "Thanks, Laurie." So then I rang the chairman and we had the same conversation with the chairman. And he agreed it should be Villa Park. So we agreed it was going to be played at Villa Park. And so that was where we were destined to play our FA Cup semi-final.
And what was the build-up for that game? I mean, how, you know, what was the build-up like running into the 8th of April 2001?
Well, I handle every single ticket we sold. Every single ticket we sold, which I think was 18,700 and something, it may have been more, went across my desk, because I'll tell you exactly why. We went to a meeting at Villa Park with the Villa safety officers, secretary, Liverpool, everybody. And Liverpool were very arrogant, condescending. We were little Wickham. We were nothing. So it started off by the FA man saying, "We'll give Wickham 10,000 tickets and Liverpool can have 30,000 tickets. So I said, "No, no," I said, "I'm not having that." I said, "We want the same number of tickets as them." And he said, "Well, your average gate is 5,000. You won't sell 20,000 tickets, 15,000 tickets. I said, "Yes, we will. I will guarantee you we will sell every single one of 15,000 tickets." So the argument went backwards and forwards for about 20 minutes, and I wasn't going to budge. And in the end, they condescended to give both clubs 15,000 tickets each. We sold all our 15,000 tickets very quickly. 4 days before the game, I had a phone call from the Steve Clark again. He said, "Keith, I've got a question for you." I said, "What's that?" He said, "Liverpool have returned 3,750 tickets. Do you think you could sell them?" I said, "You get them to me and I'll sell them within 24 hours. And we sold every one, because Liverpool couldn't sell their tickets. And if we'd have gone to Manchester, I don't know how many had gone. But that's how come we ended up with more people there than Liverpool.
And what was the excitement like inside the club on the, you know, on that day, you know, travelling up to Villa Park? I mean, what was that like going, you know, going there with, you know, literally 90 minutes away from an FA Cup final, of course, at the time, if I'm right in saying it was in Wales. I mean, what was that like?
Well, the semi-final was at Villa Park and the final would have been in Wales, but you would need to ask the players who were deeply involved with the playing side more than me. Steve Brown is the man to talk to. He did a lovely video. he talks a lot, but he's nothing to do with the Southern League, so you don't want to talk to him. But the team went away for a few days to Mijas in Spain, which was good and bad. I won't go into that at the moment. Then we came back, they came back, and they stayed overnight the night before. Obviously, I stayed overnight the night before, but obviously they were very professional, and Laurie dealt with it brilliantly. And so did Terry Gibson. Terry was a lovely man as well. And the atmosphere within the club was so tight-knit that they thought they were going to beat Liverpool. And 11 minutes from the end, my wife turned to me in the stand at Villa Park, and it was non-non. And she said, "How long to go?" And I said, 11 minutes. And we were 11 minutes from a 0-0 draw in a semi-final against Liverpool. And the atmosphere was great.
And what, what happened in those 10 minutes? Because some people probably won't know.
Well, in those 10 minutes, just as I'd told my wife there was only 11 minutes to go, Heskey scored. Heskey scored. Gerrard's cross, which is a bit of a joke because there's a place in High Wycombe called Gerrard's cross. Gerrard crossed it and Heskey scored a header. And we were 1-0 down, but we'd had a lot of chances in the game. We thought we should have had a penalty, and we'd done really, really well. Then Robbie Fowler scored a goal to make it 2-0. Then, with 2 or 3 minutes to go, Keith Ryan scored a goal in front of the Holt End, which had, on the Holt End were 18,500 Wycombe supporters. The whole of the Holt End was Wycombe. Blue and yellow squares, everything. It was the whole thing. And we then gave a real battle to try and pull it back to 2-2. But Liverpool were clearly better than us. But we gave it a really good go. And we ended up disappointed.
And of course, they went on to beat my team in the final that year. It was known as the Michael Owen final? I think so. They went on to beat Arsenal in the final. I think it was Michael Owen final, wasn't it? But I mean, so that season was over. And I suppose something that you brought up in your first season, what was the bonus like that year then with all that extra money coming in from the FA Cup run? Was it a nice little bonus?
Well, when I tell you that we were only little Wycombe Wanderers, we were never once on a live television match.
Wow.
Until the semi-final. So the only income we got was from gates, which included the game before the quarterfinal, which is the best game I've ever seen in my life. But that's another story. We ain't got time for that. So we didn't make a vast amount of money. I think in total, including prize money and television appearance money for the semi-final, we probably only made about £1 million. But nowadays, you'd make far more. You get 250 grand every time you're on telly. Mm. Different world.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that year, I'm assuming Wycombe stayed up that year in Division One. And I mean, you know, moving on to the next sort of few years.
Could I just say the week after the Liverpool game, we were away to Bristol City, and we went there, and we were, if we'd have lost, we'd have dropped into a relegation position. And as we went out to play, the whole of the stadium at Bristol City, all the Bristol City supporters stood up and applauded us onto the pitch. And we beat them 1-0. Jermaine Max Foran scored a late goal. Oh, it might have been 2-1, but Jermaine Max Foran scored a late goal and we beat them 1-0. And we stayed up comfortably after that.
I mean, from that season on, how did you get on, you know, sort of coming back down to earth the following year and the years going on? I mean, how was it at Wycombe in those times?
Well, I think when you've hit the heights, people's expectations are raised. And the phrase that was used the most that I really hated was mid-table mediocrity. Because if you finish every year mid-table in League One when you got no money, that ain't mediocrity. And pressure was put on Lorry to do better than that. And in the end, he couldn't do better than that. And sadly, he was dismissed, which was very sad. Very sad. Lovely man, Lorry. Mm. He was an acquired taste. He was a difficult man. But I've not got a bad word to say about him.
So when Lorry left the club, I mean, who came in as manager next?
Ah, now you're talking. We had a pile, a big pile of applications. And the board sifted through the applications, and they were everybody and anybody, because we were quite a catch for somebody who was out of work. And the chairman got a phone number from the agent of Tony Adams. And Tony said he was interested in doing the job. So the chairman invited him to meet the board. I went into the car park and met Tony in his car. And we came into the board, and Tony charmed the socks off the board. His attitude, what he said, his record, his aura, and they gave Tony Adams the job. So Tony Adams followed Lorry. Sadly, Tony was only there 12 months. We got relegated because we were on the way to getting relegated before Tony arrived, and he couldn't turn it round. The next season, we started well in League Two, but dropped off a little bit. And after 12 months, Tony called it a day and left.
What was he like to work with?
I loved every one of my seven managers. The one I enjoyed working with the most was Tony Adams. He was absolutely brilliant to work with and become a friend of. I could see exactly why he led the team so well when he was the captain of Arsenal. Again, lovely, lovely man. I will put a caveat on that. As a manager, he got some very strange ideas. It probably his worst one was he wanted to do it himself. He wanted to do everything. He didn't want anybody coming in who knew that level and could have assisted him. John Gorman was brought in initially to help him, but after 2 weeks, they decided it didn't work. Tony wanted to be on his own, so he took somebody in as his assistant who had no experience at that level, other than as a bit of a player. It was another nice man, but he didn't know enough about it to help Tony. But Tony wanted to do everything, and I think that was his downfall. But he got some funny ideas, Tony. But we had some tremendous times. I've got a couple of stories about Tony Adams that I can't tell you. They're clean, but I can't tell you. I'll tell you off air.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to embarrass him, but he was a great man to work with. Really enjoyed it.
So, I mean, Tony was there, and then Keith Ryan came in, I assume, as sort of a caretaker for a few weeks. And then John Gorman came in for a couple of years on for himself.
No, Tony wasn't caretaker. Tony was full-time manager.
No. I'm saying when Tony left, Keith Ryan was in, then came in maybe as caretaker?
Well, what happened? When Tony left, John Gorman came and he attended the interviews for the managers. And he was given the job. Another interesting thing was that the youth team manager at Watford came to the interview, and he walked through the door and he said, "My name is," introduced himself, "I'm going to be manager of England one day." And the board thought they'd heard it all, shrugged their shoulders, and it was Aidy Boothroyd, who one day was nearly manager of England.
Yeah.
But John Gorman was given the job.
And of course, then once when John left, of course, Paul Lambert came in, and I mean that was in his tenure. Of course, you had another great cup run as well.
Yeah, John Gorman left because of sad circumstances. His wife passed away with cancer. We had a player got killed in a car crash, and it was his fault. He'd been drinking. He was only 19. The club was in turmoil. The whole thing knocked John into another world. Mm. And he left really in very unfortunate circumstances. Brilliant bloke, good coach. We played lovely football and got some decent results. And when he went, we had a lot of adverts again come in. I was in the office with the chairman going through the adverts, and he made a pile of possibles, a pile of probables, and a pile that he hadn't really looked at too much. So he said, I don't fancy the possibles, I'll get rid of them, we'll look at the probables. I said, well, in that pile of ones you've put to one side is somebody who's got a European Cup winners medal. I said, he's also managed in the Scottish League. I said, and he's played for Celtic, and he's bound to worth seeing. And it was Paul Lambert. And Paul came along for his interview, impressed, and became manager, and did a good job.
Mm. So, I mean, 2007... You know, you get to the semi-final of the League Cup, in those, what I still feel was an awful two-legged affair for a semi-final. But, I mean, you go into that semi-final against Chelsea. And, I mean, tell us about getting to that semi-final.
Well, the round before, we beat Charlton Athletic away. And Charlton Athletic in those days were quite high up in the Premier League. So it was another Leicester situation. And we won 1-0. Jermaine Easter scored the only goal. And that gave us the semi-final against Chelsea. If you look behind me, you will see the poster. Mm-hmm. And underneath the Wickham badge, Jose Mourinho is signed. Underneath the Chelsea badge, Paul Lambert is signed. They signed the wrong place. But we were at home to Chelsea.
Yeah.
It was a sellout, 10,500 people, and it was played on my birthday, the 10th of January. I actually joked, and I don't say jokes because I'm not funny, but I actually said there were 10,500 people at my birthday party. And Chelsea scored, and then we'd put a lot of pressure on them in the second half, and they were a bit surprised. And Jermaine Easter again equalised and made it 1-1. And towards the end, Russell Martin had a great effort that could have gone in and give us a win. And he didn't. He didn't go in. So everybody came off. And Jose Mourinho, who was a lovely man, he was brilliant. He was very nice and chatty and friendly. And he wasn't happy with his team. And he went into the dressing room. Have you ever been to Adams Park in a car, by the way?
I haven't, no, no.
Nobody moves in the car park for a good hour. So there's 10,000 people there, so there's twice as many people there. So he went into the dressing room very, very quickly, clearly shouted at his players and ordered them back on the bus because he wanted to get them away. And they sat on the bus for an hour and a quarter because it didn't move. It just sat in the car park. We then went to Chelsea for the second leg, which was another wonderful experience. And we finished runners up.
It was 4-0, if I remember rightly.
I don't remember this game. I remember every kick. We were drawing none after about 20 minutes and doing well. And our best player was Tommy Doherty, who was another man. I'll tell you a few stories about him one day, but he was a great lad, good player, our best player, I think. And he got the ball and he passed it square and it was intercepted by one of their players who ran on and scored. And after that, it could have been double figures. But it was 4-0. But we had a wonderful day. Wonderful day.
So, I mean, so near and yet so far on both occasions for Wickham. And then sort of on from there, you know, and a few years later, of course, you retire from Wickham. I mean, how tough was that?
Well, I'd had two promotions. I've got medals to prove it. I'd had two promotions, two FA Cup semi-finals, 12-ish wonderful years, lots of memories. Sadly, with two promotions goes two relegations, and you don't get medals for those. I loved every single moment of my time at Wickham. 1960s song, can't remember who by, even the bad times are good. And even the bad times were good. Loved every single minute of it. But I think you know when it's time to move on. And there were differences within the club. We got a new chairman, a new owner came in. He brought some new people in who I got on well with and worked reasonably well with. But I'd reached the stage where I thought, maybe it's time I moved on to something else. I didn't retire. Well, I still haven't retired. I thought maybe it's time to move on to something else. So I have to go in the summer for obvious reasons. So I put my resignation in, and my last match was at home to Nottingham Forest in the League Cup, and we lost about 3-4-1, at which time I stood behind the goal on my own, shed a few tears, and left. And I've hardly been back since. I've always been made very, very welcome. But when you're gone, you're gone. Because nobody does it how you did it.
So from there, though, Keith, I mean, what did life throw at you in football from there? And, you know, I mean, from what you, you know, what I've seen, you know, president of the, you know, of the Southern League in 2010. You know, and then sort of 2013 went on to the independent member of the Hampshire FA Disciplinary Chairs Panel, the independent member of the FA Judicial Panel, which you're still part of, you know, and then also a member of the FA Anti-Discrimination Chairs Panel. So you certainly didn't sit back and relax, did you?
Well, what happened was when I left, because I got on with everybody extremely well in the Football League, because it was the Football League in those days, and in the FA, particularly in the disciplinary department, they both said, you're too good to disappear. We'll give you a ring you and offer you something. So I said, yeah, okay. But you take offers like that with a pinch of salt, don't you? So I moved away, nothing for about 2 months. And then in the same week, I had two phone calls. One was from the Mark Ives, who was the disciplinary manager at the FA, and said, would you like to go on the FA Judicial Panel and the FA Anti-Discrimination Panel? I thanked him very much, and I said, yes, please. I went on various seminars and did all sorts of training. So I am on the FA Judicial Panel. I'm a little bit like a travelling magistrate, if you like, for naughty boys, everything from the Premier League down to the under eights on a Sunday morning. That then developed into the National Serious Cases Panel, which I am a chair of. You're looking at the clock. Am I rattling?
Oh, no. Somebody just walked in my front room. That's all.
You can edit this. So I'm now on the National Serious Cases Panel, which also deals with discrimination. And I'm still on the FA Judicial Panel, and I'm on the FA Appeal Board. So I sit on FA Appeals. The other telephone call was from the Football League, who were looking for representatives, and to use their words, who knew their way around a football ground, because I am their representative at live televised matches. So that I'm basically a glorified box ticker. They call me a televised match manager, but I don't manage anything. I just go along, tick a lot of boxes. I'm really the link between Sky TV and the club and the floor manager for Sky TV. And if there's any problems, I have to try and sort it out. I have to be in the tunnel at half time and full time, see interviews and things. So I do that probably 3-4 matches a month. And I do all my FA work, which keeps me very, very busy. And I'm also obviously president of the Southern League, go to all their meetings, and that keeps me busy as well.
So what's it like being the president for the Southern League?
Well, it's no different to being on the board, apart from the fact I don't have a vote. And I've done it for 32 years. I've been to board meetings for 32 years. I've been the chairman, I've been the president for 12 years, and one just moves it into the other. There's two sorts of president. One is a working president who contributes, and the other one is a cardboard cutout wheeled out for ceremonial occasions. And I'm not a cardboard cutout wheeled out for ceremonial occasions. When I reach that stage, my wife will say, "Come on, you silly old fool, it's time you packed up." And then I'll pack up. But I'm not quite there yet.
So, I mean, with that, I mean, you know, with that sort of president, you know, sort of thing, that must be very proud to, you know, to be able to do that job and, for, you know, to be doing it now for, what, 12 years? I mean, that's incredible. I mean, what do you think about the changes from when you were made president in 2010 to where we are now in 2021-22 season? I mean, there's been a lot of changes through the years, and probably some of the bigger changes have been this year as well, haven't they? This season, with clubs being moved left, right, centre, and all over the place. I mean, have you seen lots of changes? I mean, what sort of stories can you tell us from a president's mindset?
Not as many as I'd like to. first of all, I've got to point out that if you look in the book, in 127 years, I think we've only had half a dozen presidents. Somebody was president through two world wars. It's remarkable how few presidents we've had. It might be more than half a dozen, but it's not many more. So I really do feel proud and highly honoured to have served in the position. If I get the sack tomorrow, I get the sack tomorrow. Or if I decide I ain't going to do it anymore, that's fine. But over the 12 years I've been president, there have been tremendous changes. Doug Gillard was the chairman when I first became president. He was very, very good. When Doug sadly passed away, Ken Turner took over as chairman. And Ken Turner was a very, very good chairman. He was chairman for many years. He brought the league on dramatically. But sadly, at an AGM, the clubs voted that they wanted a change, and Ken had to stand down, and Terry Barrett came in. And Terry is a totally different type of chairman to Ken. No better, no worse, but his policy is different and the way he approaches things is different. And they're both very, very good chairmen of the Southern League, both of them. But there have been a lot of changes. I think the biggest changes of all came about probably a bit before that, when the National League, or the conference as it was in those days, decided they were going to have a North and South division. And in order to have a North and South division, they took all of our bigger and better clubs. So we had to start again. Mm. And we had to recruit clubs from a different sort of strata. Our big city, big town clubs have moved to the conference, and we had a lot of smaller town clubs and big village clubs. I won't call them village clubs because they're bigger than village clubs, yeah. But smaller clubs who themselves would say that they are not of the same level as the clubs that moved into the National League South and North, although that's what they aspire to. I always say clubs will love to get into the Southern League, but once they're in it, they're trying very, very hard to get out of it because they want to progress, and that's life. And I think that's the biggest change that I've seen.
And are you still, I mean, you know, coming to the end of our chat, but I mean, how, you know, do you still enjoy the job as much as you did back when you first took it over?
Well, the president's job.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I do. I don't think it's changed that much. Well, we have the odd moment, but I don't think it's changed that much. It's sad to me that because I haven't got a club, I don't get to go to matches as a club director or a chairman. So I don't meet the opposition or the other clubs in the league that often. I do go to Southern League matches. Sometimes I'll go and they ain't got a clue who I am. And I'm not one who's going to say, oh, I'm the president, blah, blah, blah. So sometimes I'll go to the match and they don't know who I am. So my big regret is I don't really intimately know as many people on the board and at the clubs as I would like to. And I think that's the difference, because I haven't got a club, and that is disappointing. But I still enjoy it.
Well, let's hope from this everybody knows who you are from now on in. But do you get secretaries, maybe, you know, younger secretaries or secretaries that have just taken over at a club, whether that's in the Southern League, if it's in a lower league, or you know, if it's in Isthmian or Northern, they might know you. Do you get many of them giving you a call or sending you an email asking you for a little bit of advice, even maybe, you know, league secretaries that have just taken over jobs? Do you get anybody, or have you had anybody that actually, you know, comes to you and says, what advice have you got for me, Keith?
Well, not now, because they don't know who I am. And I would imagine most of the secretaries in the Southern League haven't got a clue I was a secretary for 28 years at this level and did 12 years in the Football League as well. They wouldn't have a clue. So they might not think to come and ask me for advice. We've also got a first-class secretary, operations director in Jason Mills, who will give them any advice they need. Over the years, when I was in the Football League, I did have quite a few phone calls from Football League secretaries asking for advice and asking what to do. One of the secrets of being a secretary, because nobody's perfect, is if you make what might turn out to be a mistake, knowing who to pick the phone up and how to get out of it. And that's a key thing to know. So I've had a few people ask me for advice when they've dropped a bit of a ghoulie. And I have been asked for advice by non-league clubs over the years, but certainly not for a long while, because I'm sure that the vast majority of secretaries in the Southern League haven't got a clue who I am. They haven't got a clue what my background is, and the fact that I was actually a football secretary for 40 odd years, which is a long while.
And I suppose it's one of those things, isn't it? I always looked at it. I did the job as a match day secretary for a period of time. But I was always on tender hooks to make sure that I didn't make a mistake. Do you know what I mean? And I was always sort of a little bit nervous, thinking, I don't want to make a mistake here because I don't want to cost the club 3 points. So I don't want to cost the club, you know, being taken out of the FA Cup or the FA Trophy, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, did you ever come anywhere close to any sort of mistakes that could have cost either in the non-league when he was doing non-league secretary or when he was at Wickham?
No. There was a mistake made, not by me, when I was at Wickham. And I was in a position where I was able to pick the phone up and talk to somebody and say, look, we've done this. What do I do to get out of it now? And they pointed me in the right direction. Not that they broke any rules, but we got out of it. But that's the closest I've ever been. You've just got to be careful. You've got to be a different type of person. You've got to be able to be, you've got to be organised. You've got to know what you're doing. You've got to know the rules and regulations. You've got to be meticulous. You've got to be extremely careful. But you've also got to stand up to a manager that comes up to you and says, I want him to play on Saturday. You've got to be able to say, he can't because he ain't signed on in time, or, you know, you can't do this. And some secretaries sometimes are a little bit in awe of their managers. But I've had 31 over the years, including 7 in the Football League. And I'm not frightened of any of them. And if you're right, you've got to be able to say to them, we can't do that. Because if we do it, we will be in trouble.
No, absolutely. Listen, Keith, the time's run away from us, but it's been an absolutely fantastic hour. I've thoroughly enjoyed the chat we've had today, and hopefully you have as well. And
can I just say one final thing?
Yeah,
and this is very brief, very brief. You didn't ask me why I wanted the game, the semi-final played at Villa Park. In 1958, when I was 10, I went to Villa Park and I stood on the Holt End before it was covered. And I've been an Aston Villa supporter ever since.
Oh, there we go.
So there was only ever one place the semi-final was going to be. I was first in the game, in the ground, before the game, and I was last to leave afterwards.
Nice. I mean, I'm an Arsenal fan, so I would have loved it to have been down at the Emirates because it weren't there then. But there
it wasn't the Emirates then, it was Highbury.
And I wish it still was. But yeah, as we said, a massive thank you to Keith for giving up your time today. I really, really appreciate it. And I've learned so much about you, so much about your career. And hopefully everybody at home has learned a lot about Keith and, you know, and knows who Keith is now, as Keith said before. And a massive thank you for that. We'll be back, hopefully with Steve, with our third episode of My Life in Football. But please make sure you subscribe to the new Southern League YouTube channel and carry on watching the shows that we are going to be putting out in the coming weeks and months going forward. But from me and from Keith, thank you for watching today.